Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we're going to be talking about a wide range of different health-impacting subjects today, subjects that you may not necessarily hear about from any other sources. Hi, Dr. Slavin.
Thank you, Janet. And I have an interesting topic to talk to our listeners about today, and it's one that affects a whole lot of people, and that's the use of statin drugs.
Oh, my goodness. Every person that I talk to, they have been told by their physician that they need a statin drug, and it seems like even with people whose cholesterol levels are 150, the doctor's still suggesting statin class drugs.
Well, the drug companies have done a good job with this one. Statins are the most profitable medications in the history of Big Pharma.
Wow, so they have outpaced even blood pressure lowering drugs? Because those were big too. And I thought that's why the cholesterol drugs kind of came into the picture.
It may be, financially speaking, maybe generating the most revenue.
Because they're expensive.
Yeah. They are promoted as the go-to medication to prevent and treat heart disease. And a recent study found nearly 100% of men and 62% of women between the ages of 66 and 75 should take a statin medication, even if their cholesterol levels are normal.
Okay, what might the reasoning, besides financial, be for that suggestion?
Okay. Well, they're getting the recommendations from all over, but it's interesting. All these recommendations from different sources are really the same source, because probably at the top of the chain, they're all under one umbrella. I'm talking about conventional cardiologists, the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, and many other mainstream groups would have you believe that statins should be placed in the water supply. If statins significantly lowered the risk of heart disease, and by the way, they don't, and if statins were not associated with adverse effects, and they are, then one could entertain a discussion on the widespread use of statins. However, statins are associated with a wide range of serious adverse drug reactions, which should cause any health care provider to think twice, or at least to use caution when prescribing this class of medication. I didn't have to think twice. I only thought once. I saw the drug and I said, not for me, and I recommend my patients bypass this drug.
And as long ago as 1996, the Journal of the American Medical Association has published articles about the dangers associated with statin drugs.
Now, they believe it or not, the FDA keeps track of all the adverse reactions to statins.
And yet they're still on the market. What a surprise.
But here's the thing, too, is they feel only 1 to 10% of drug reactions are actually reported to the FDA. Now, how do statins work? And remember I said on another program at another time, I said, when they used to call drugs by their real name, nobody would take it.
I remember you saying that.
You know, because they're poisons. But now they don't call them poisons, obviously. They call them statins, or they call them pharmaceuticals or drugs. And for some reason, then people don't care. I don't know. Every day I hear commercials on television listing all the side effects of a drug. And I say to myself, how can anybody in their right mind even consider taking that drug? But statins work by poisoning an enzyme, HMG-CoA reductase. Now, that enzyme, the reason they picked statins out and the reason they targeted HMG-CoA reductase is because that's what's needed to produce cholesterol. But it's also needed to produce adrenal and sex hormones. It's needed for memory proteins and to maintain cellular energy. And by the way, this is going to help you understand why we're against statin drugs. The highest concentration of cholesterol in the body is found in the brain.
And I often talk to people, remember about 25, 30 years ago, how many people did you hear of that were diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease? You might have heard of dementia, but it was not so common to hear about Alzheimer's disease, and it wasn't so common that people you knew were diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Then, 25 years later, with pretty much everybody over the age of 50 being recommended to take a cholesterol-lowering drug, doesn't surprise me that there's such an interesting increase in Alzheimer's diagnoses.
Are you trying to make an association between the use of statins and the number of Alzheimer's diagnosed?
I was trying to make a connection between statin drugs and the changes in brain chemistry for so many older people, really significant memory loss and brain dysfunction.
Because as a little bit of an aside, I remember hearing a lecture given by a pathologist, and he was observing the brains of his patients, which were all dead. He was doing autopsies, and he said the brains of Alzheimer's patients reminded him of the brains of syphilis patients, the tertiary syphilis or neurosyphilis. And then he went on to say that we don't have an epidemic anymore, or at least a lot of cases of syphilis, but we do have Lyme disease. And most people should keep in mind that the bacteria that causes Lyme disease is in the same family as the bacteria that causes syphilis. They're both spirochetes. And he was saying that perhaps Lyme disease or Alzheimer's is a form of neuro-Lyme disease. It's an interesting concept, and it hasn't been disproven.
Hasn't been disproven, and there are researchers looking into the symptoms of Lyme disease in people that have never been exposed to a tick. So there's a lot of mystery associated with the Alzheimer's epidemic. There's also talk about diabetes of the brain, referring to Alzheimer's. So there's a lot of issues, and it's interesting that the medical community is so focused on lowering cholesterol.
Well, syphilis, before we get back to statin, syphilis was a very difficult disease to diagnose. They used to call it the great masquerader because of so many symptoms that would eventually be tracked down to being caused by syphilis. And the same thing is true with Lyme. You see patients with it have, so many different symptoms, and that's why it's so difficult to diagnose. It presents in so many different ways.
Okay, with regard to syphilis, certainly the advent of antibiotics made that a less frightening diagnosis. Were the antibiotics successful after the spirochete had been present in the body for an extended period of time?
No.
Okay, so that's the situation with Lyme. If you don't catch it very early on, the antibiotic therapy is not successful.
So now getting back to statins, we said they poison the enzyme HMG-CoA reductase, which is needed to produce cholesterol. The greatest amount of cholesterol in our bodies is found in our brains, and when you block the production of cholesterol, you're going to affect the brain. I think that should be clear to everybody. So here's what the FDA has collected. There were 36,605 reports of brain dysfunction, which included memory impairment, transient cases of global amnesia, confusion, paranoia, disorientation, depression, and dementia related to statin use. And remember, this is only 1 to 10% of the true number of adverse drug reactions. Now, here's something else to think about. Those patients taking statin drugs, think that's the only drug they're taking?
That's such an important discussion, that so many of the people are taking drugs for digestive distress, for insomnia, for blood pressure, for circulation. The list just goes on and on.
And the drug interactions, where I'm going is, you know, one drug can cause all these problems.
Unknowable.
Now, if those side effects were attributed to a vitamin, how quickly do you think the FDA would pull that vitamin from the market?
I think in the blink of an eye.
If it caused tens of thousands of people to have brain dysfunction, you think they'd leave it on the market?
I doubt it.
By the way, since we're talking about that, not one death has ever been attributed to the use of vitamin supplements.
Okay, so we can assume from that that they are safe for the general population, all ages, all health situations.
So it's not just, by the way, it's not just the brain that suffers from statins. There are reported well over 100,000 adverse events reported related to statins. In addition to the brain, statins negatively affect the functioning of the liver, and that's why you should have your liver functions tested. It's a blood test. It affects the kidneys. It affects muscles. Recently, it was reported to increase the risk of diabetes, particularly in women.
And the issues associated with statin drugs as the statins relate to hormones, very, very significant information with regard to hormone dysfunction. The hormone dysfunction, in turn, creating problems with digestion and mood and insomnia. So the interactions, the problems associated with these drugs as the base of the problem is just absolutely outrageous.
Now, people take statin drugs because they want to reduce their risk of cardiovascular disease, particularly heart attacks.
Okay, but they wouldn't necessarily think of changing their diet or exercising for reducing.
That would require
two very well proven aspects of reducing your risk of cardiovascular disease.
That requires personal responsibility. But here's the problem. Statins do not reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. Statins have never been convincingly shown to prevent a first heart attack in both men and women. And in men, the best that can be said about statin studies shows a 1 to 4% reduction in the risk of preventing a second cardiac event. In women, the numbers are even worse. So, I mean, even if you look at the studies, there's nothing clear cut. Now, you just have to show a 1 or 2% benefit over a placebo to get a drug into the marketplace. But is that really worth all the risks associated with taking this drug?
I routinely quote a myth and truth part of the WestonAPrice.org website. The myth: cholesterol and statin class drugs reduce the risk of heart attack. That was the myth. The truth: in young and middle-aged men with cholesterol levels over 300, the risk is reduced by a very, very small amount. And the truth paragraph goes on to say, for older men and women of all ages, high cholesterol is associated with a longer lifespan. I just find that astonishing. Astonishing that that kind of information does not get any kind of media attention, and yet hundreds of thousands, millions of people across the globe are taking statin drugs.
It just goes to show you how brainwashing works. That's what it is. They've convinced people to take a drug. I'm surprised they haven't yet made an over-the-counter drug.
I'm sure that's coming.
Well,
it's very, very interesting because there is some media attention to the B vitamin niacin, vitamin B3. And niacin is one of the approaches that people can use to lower cholesterol. And along with using niacin, very, very important, as you mentioned, for statin class drugs to check liver function. Also, when you're taking niacin, very, very important to check liver enzymes. And the niacin is going to open up your blood vessels, so you're going to improve circulation. You're possibly going to take a little bit of stress off your heart, and you're going to lower cholesterol. So here's a very, very inexpensive way to address cardiovascular issues.
Well, we've both been talking about health issues for over 30 years, and whenever I see mainstream media coming down against something that's natural, that's my signal that it's good.
It must be working.
And it's working. Because if it didn't work, why would they care? You know, if it didn't interfere with what they're doing, why would they care? Like chelation therapy. Why would they care about chelation therapy if it didn't work? You know, it's not hurting anybody.
It's possibly hurting their bottom line,
that's part of it. But I think that's, we have to start really reading what's being printed and then look to see who's printing it and who's behind it, if you can find out. And that'll tell you a lot about different things.
One of the things, just an aside with regard to cholesterol, heart disease, and statin drugs, the FDA has just recently, I don't know whether the word is requested or ordered, but they have instructed Bayer, the manufacturer of most of the aspirin produced globally, to remove the remove the part on their labels about aspirin reducing the risk of heart disease. Very, very interesting, Dr. Slavin. I don't know how many people you speak to that say they're taking a baby aspirin, or even in some cases, some of the patients having been told by their doctors, take a full-strength aspirin every day. And the FDA is saying, not anymore.
Well, I remember hearing a lecture, and we're going back over 20 years now, when the study first came out about the benefits of aspirin. And they repeated the original study, and they couldn't duplicate the results. And the only difference between the two studies was, in the first study, they used a buffered aspirin, and it was buffered with magnesium. In the second study, they didn't. It had no magnesium. So in reality, it was felt the benefits that they attributed to aspirin was really due to the magnesium in the product. And we know that magnesium, which is an essential nutrient, is deficient in everybody. And here's the other thing. Now you take a group of people walking down the street and you test their magnesium levels, and then you determine what the normal magnesium is. And obviously, if you think about it, since everybody is so deficient in magnesium, I think the normal range is going to be lower than optimal. And, you know, something to consider. So everybody should be taking a magnesium supplement. And how do you know how much to take? You know how much to take when you're taking too much and you back down a little bit.
Bowel tolerance would
exactly
be the recommendation. Very, very interesting, because in additional studies with regard to the aspirin, yes, indeed, there was no benefit to heart attack, but there was a risk with regard to a bleed, an unexpected bleed. And so people need to know that the tiny blood vessels in your body become very fragile with the use of aspirin, and that crack or break in the blood vessel is not something you want to happen. So if you want to use aspirin on occasion, not a problem, but on a daily basis, there are problems even with the low dose aspirin.
And we mentioned magnesium before. Testing is very important. And one of the things I've observed, Janet's observed, the doctors aren't testing people with all the tests that could be found to be very helpful in identifying people at risk. They're doing a complete blood count, a chemistry panel. They might be testing your thyroid, and definitely they're testing your lipids. But either they're testing you to figure out what drug to put you on, or whether or not you need to be in the hospital and meet the hospital criteria for admission. But there are so many different tests that can identify people at risk for so many ailments that you can control naturally and prevent the problems from ever occurring.
It's interesting because on a basic blood test, you're very well assured of seeing a calcium level, but not very well assured of seeing magnesium tested. And even if it were to be tested, most times, unfortunately, it is a serum magnesium level, which is of no real value to give any kind of true information about how magnesium is functioning within your body. What you need to be tested for is red blood cell magnesium level, because the magnesium is a cellular nutrient.
Exactly. It's intracellular. Probably only 10% of the total amount of magnesium is found in the serum. So you really can't extrapolate as to how much magnesium is in your cell by looking at 10%. You want to look at the 90%.
It's also very interesting because I've seen on lab tests, Dr. Slavin, that the level for calcium is increasing. The range used to be 8.6 to 10.2, and I pretty much would always tell clients that I was working with that you didn't want your calcium going over 10. And now I see that the upper level has increased to 10.3 in some labs, 10.4 in other labs. Do you have an opinion about what the risks of those higher calcium levels might be?
Well, my only opinion here is that people are taking calcium without magnesium, number one. They're taking it disproportionately because you get a lot of calcium in your diet, and probably creating even a worse deficit with magnesium when you don't take the two together, if you're indeed going to do that. And the recommendation is you take it in a sort of a one-to-one proportion. If you're going to take 500 milligrams of calcium, make sure you're getting 500 milligrams of magnesium. But I tell my patients, skip the calcium, just take the magnesium, because calcium is very easy to get. Because if you're not eating food that has calcium in it naturally, then you probably, and that's, you know, so that's the good diet, has lots of magnesium, not calcium, I mean magnesium. No, talking about calcium. So if you're not eating a diet that has it in there naturally, which is a healthy diet, that means you're eating a prepackaged types of foods, and they're going to be added calcium into it to make it attractive to be sold, because patients look, oh, look, it's got calcium in there, that must be good. You know, my orange juice is fortified with calcium. You know, what a good idea that was.
And so, unfortunately, that whole discussion brings me around to the idea that for many physicians, their basic recommendation for their patients is to be taking a statin drug. And on the side of supplements, most physicians don't really recommend using supplements at all, the exception being calcium. And so my viewpoint has evolved over the years into this unopposed calcium supplementation rather than a calcium with an equal amount of a high quality magnesium, not just magnesium oxide, leads to deposition of calcium in soft tissue. And when we start to think about people over the age of, say, 50, 60 years of age, what are we dealing with very, very frequently? Arthritis. That's the calcium being deposited in soft tissue between the joints, not necessarily into the long bones, where the doctor recommending the calcium is assuming the calcium is going to go. And in addition to the joints, soft tissue that I'm talking about, blood vessels. Do you have a comment on that, Dr. Slavin?
That's exactly right. I remember in my early years in training, looking at x-rays of old people. You know, you get a chest x-ray, and you see that the aorta, for example, is totally calcified. You see, it looks like another bone in the middle of your chest that goes down. I mean, because the calcification is laid down in your arteries. So you need to pay attention. Calcium, by the way, is a, its deposition is associated with inflammation. So you want to reduce inflammation, and all these things, all the healthy choices you can make, correct all these problems. It's the unhealthy choices we make that create the inflammation, then create the calcium deposition in the areas you don't want it, and it's like a vicious cycle. You can decide to go one way or the other, and what we try to point people is in the right direction. If you're drinking lots of milk, why, I don't know, but if you are, you want to drink less. I think more and more people are saying, substitute, you know, almond milk. I heard one lecturer recommend coconut milk, because it's high in the medium chain triglycerides that help the body burn fat. And make those little changes because they can be very helpful. And back to milk, the best milk is raw milk. You're not getting raw milk. So you're getting pasteurized and homogenized milk, which have other issues, and it coming from cows that have been treated with who knows what, unless you're getting organic milk, which is a step better. So I think if you must have your milk, at least get organic milk, preferably from pastured cows. But, you know, you really have to take stock of how you're eating. Of myself personally, the more I pay attention to what I'm eating, the less I go out to eat.
Oh, that's a sad statement.
But isn't that true?
It's true. Absolutely, it is true.
So, you know, you're limited to what you can go out to eat. I mean, I can go out to eat and, you know, try and get wild fish. Can have that. You know, the salads are not going to be organic most of the times. So those are, you know, what happens when you go out to eat. You're limiting yourself.
So if you want the highest quality diet, you really need to be choosing organic foods. For sure, animals that are pasture raised, not from confined animal feeding operations. And when you do that, a lot of the issues associated with degenerative disease that so many American citizens deal with, and so much of our medical expenditures are focused on, the issues don't arise. You feel better, and you are not, fortunately, you are not dealing with the degenerative diagnoses.
See, we started off talking about statins and how it affects the brain, but everything is related. So when you talk about unlike mainstream medicine, where you have one drug for one problem, when you really...
And 10 drugs for the 10 other problems.
When you talk about good health, it's all related. You can't just say, well, take your calcium, that's going to make you better. Or even take your magnesium, that's going to make you better. There's really, you know, the old saying, a chain is as strong as its weakest link. You know, if you're not doing everything that your body needs, you're not going to get the results you're looking for.
And that kind of leads us to the conclusion of our conversation, always wide-ranging, always interesting. And we thank you very much for visiting naturaldocradio.com. Make sure that you visit often.
Bye-bye, everybody.